It's the 365 Days of Astronomy podcast. Coming in 3, 2, 1.
You are listening to the NASA Lunar Science Institute podcast, which highlights the latest news and information of the Moon, on the Moon, and from the Moon. It's produced by the NASA Lunar Science Institute at the Ames Research Center in Moffett Field, California.
Is there ice in permanently shadowed craters on the Moon? Hi, this is Nancy Atkinson for the NASA Lunar Science Institute. Scientists working with the Mini-RF instrument on the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter have been attempting a very special and exciting experiment called bistatic radar observations. And with a little help from their friends at the Arecibo Observatory in Puerto Rico, the team is obtaining data to test the hypothesis that ice may be present inside craters near the Moon's poles. Joining us today is Dr. Ben Bussey, principal investigator for the Mini-RF instrument. He's also the principal investigator for the Polar Team for NLSI, looking at aspects of the lunar poles. Hi, Ben, and thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, great to be here. Thanks for talking to me.
Well, first of all, the Mini-RF is a radar instrument. Can you describe the types of things that you and your team normally look at when you're using the instrument alone?
Yes, typically, Mini-RF has been used to take what are called synthetic aperture radar data. And we're in orbit around the Moon onboard LRO. We essentially use radar to map out, we can map out roughness and also potentially look for water ice. And what's unique about radar is that it's its own illumination. You can think of it as its own flashlight. We're able to look inside the permanently shadowed craters and actually image the floors of those. And also the other good thing about Mini-RF is we were able to image the far side of the Moon, which is the side of the Moon that we can't see for the first time with radar, because you can only do that in orbit.
Okay, so could you explain what a bistatic experiment is with radar then?
Yes, so the normal synthetic aperture radar data that we take are called monostatic, and that's because we use the same antenna to transmit and receive. And one of the things we want to investigate is how the radar signal varies as a function of something called bistatic angle. So that's the angle between sort of the transmitted beam and the received beam. And when you use the same antenna for both, angle is zero. Now, there's been some excellent bistatic work done with Earth using Arecibo in Puerto Rico to transmit and Green Bank in West Virginia to receive. Even though those are a long distance apart from each other, the Moon is so far away, the bistatic angle for those measurements is still very close to zero. We're very excited to be doing with Mini-RF, taking bistatic data, so that data using a different antenna to transmit and receive, where we can actually look at how the lunar surface behaves with radar as a function of bistatic angle, going out to numbers like 10 and 15 degrees. Now, the reason we want to do this is look for water ice. There's a radar science product that we make called the circular polarization ratio, and I'll refer to that as CPR by its acronym. Now, typically the Moon has low values to CPR, a normal dry surface. Now, sometimes we do see high values to CPR. CPR can be caused both by a rough rocky terrain or by the presence of water ice. Now, that's true for monostatic data. So at very low bistatic angles, sort of close to zero, you can get high CPR for two different reasons. And we do see high CPR where geologically people to think that it's rocky. In some places, it could be water ice. Now, physics predicts that if you go out in bistatic angle, if it's high CPR because of rocks, it will stay high. The CPR values will stay high as you increase tick angle. But if it's high CPR at a static of zero because of water ice, then the CPR value will actually drop off as you go to higher angles. So what we're doing for the first time is measuring different geologic areas of the Moon at static angles other than zero to try and see whether these craters have ice.
So you've been able to do some tests of this kind of bistatic experiment with the Arecibo Observatory. Could you explain how that's done exactly?
Yes, absolutely. So Arecibo is a very large radio telescope in Puerto Rico. It's 100 meters across. And what we do is we transmit a signal from Arecibo, it bounces off the moon, and then is received by Mini-RF in orbit. And we target interesting features. So we are targeting places that, obviously we're targeting craters that we think are icy. And part of a solid science answer to this is also going to be image places that have high CPR, not near the poles, know it's high because of rocks, but we can actually measure for the first time, we expect to show that the CPR values stay high as you change bistatic angle. Because that, in order to say that the places where the CPR goes low, ice, we need to show that places that are rocky don't also become low.
Okay. So what kind of luck have you had with your tests and observations so far?
Well, we've been very pleased. We imaged two different places on the moon in May, and recently our data get processed by colleagues at the Andea National Lab in Albuquerque, and they've done an excellent job processing the data. And we now have images of two parts of the moon, one near the South Pole and one more equatorial. The quality of the images that we've been able to make with the bistatic data actually look as good as the monostatic SAR data we have to compare with.
Okay. Could you talk about the challenges of doing such an experiment? You know, you've got a spacecraft moving at a very high speed near the moon and another instrument, Arecibo, millions of kilometers away from the moon. Just how challenging is to work together?
It's challenging from a technical perspective. The Arecibo are easy to work with, but we have to juggle a number of different parameters. You know, the first thing we do, the Mini-RF team has a targeting database of features we think are scientifically valuable to image with bistatic. The way the process works is if we're planning observations during a month, we'd look at the highest priority targets that are available in that month. Then we work with Arecibo to see when we are able to get Arecibo time. Arecibo is a very important scientific asset, so lots of scientists are using it for multiple reasons. So you can't just use it whenever you want. You have to work with Arecibo to see when it's available. Once we've identified a time, we then have to make sure that we can point LRO at the moon, the right geometry, not only to take our data, but also not to violate any of the constraints of LRO itself. For example, LRO has a very nice camera on board called LROC. We have to make sure that we don't accidentally point LROC at the sun or when we are taking data. And quite often we try and take data while the spacecraft is over the night side of the moon, and that way that can help with that. So there's a lot of things to juggle, and then obviously we have to do the actual observation itself. You know, Arecibo has to transmit the signal at exactly the right time, and we provide information to LRO, and they do a great job at maneuvering the spacecraft so that our antenna is pointing at the right part of the moon at exactly the right time. And ground speed of LRO is about 1.6 kilometers a second. So as you rightly say, it's challenging, equally exciting at the same time, and also satisfying when you get to see the wonderful images that the hard work of many different people are involved in putting together.
Well, I know the data is still being processed and you don't have any final results yet, but could you talk a little bit about what you're hoping to see?
First thing we'll do is the scientific strategic plan will be to image as many of the craters near both poles that the monostatic radar data shows are consistent with an icy regolith. Regolith is another word for lunar soil, an icy regolith mix. But then if we do find places which had high CPR in the monostatic, now have low in the bistatic, part of this, the science rationale will involve imaging places on the moon that have high CPR that we know isn't icy, and showing, hopefully, that the CPR remains high in the bistatic.
Okay. Any idea of the amount of water ice that might be there?
Well, that's a very interesting question. So, I mean, we're not the only instrument to ever have looked for ice at the moon. First measurement that sort of got reported was actually the Clementine bistatic radar experiment in 1994. At that time, the Clementine spacecraft, which was a NASA DOD small satellite that went orbited the moon, actually used its communications dish to transmit a signal bounced off the moon. This was retrieved by the Deep Space Network on Earth. And those scientists, and that's published a paper, said they thought the results were consistent with an ice regolith mixture inside Shackleton Crater. It was a bit of a controversial result. There were some Earth-based radar scientists who didn't agree with it. So we've had Lunar Prospector, which carried a neutron spectrometer and reported enhanced elevated amounts of hydrogen near both poles, but it couldn't say what the chemical form of the hydrogen was, whether it was solar wind or water. And then you have the LCROSS, very exciting LCROSS experiment run by NASA Ames. They impacted the Centaur upper stage that launched both LRO and LCROSS to the moon. The LCROSS spacecraft imaged the Earth. This landed inside Cabeus Permanently Shadowed Crater. LCROSS spacecraft used its instruments to look at the lunar soil that was thrown up into the sunlight, and they saw, I believe, about 5% water ice. So there are a number of different pieces of evidence that water ice does exist in the polar region. They all give slightly different amounts, but certainly if when we hopefully go and land in these regions and measure them, which is to be able to do see what it's like as a resource, certainly seen numbers of millions of tons quoted in papers. But we won't really know. I mean, all these instruments from orbit measure the upper few centimeters, or in the case of the radar, say down to 1 meter. If we really want to find out how much of an actual resource this is for future explorers, water ice is a significant resource in that you can easily convert it to hydrogen and oxygen. So you could use oxygen and life support systems for future astronauts. But also, hydrogen and oxygen is the same as rocket fuel. It's the same fuel that the shuttle used to use. So potentially, if the water ice is there in significant quantities and is able, and we're able to extract it, it's feasible to turn long-term the moon into a gas station for exploring into the solar system. But just like we do prospecting on Earth, use remote sensing, you then have to go on the ground to really find out how much and what form the resource is in. I think longer term, if we really want to find out exactly how much there is, we're going to have to land in some of these areas and then drill. What I hope data such as our bistatic data will do is help to locate the best initial places to explore on the surface.
Okay, that sounds exciting. Well, at the Lunar and Planetary Science Conference, you mentioned that there are multiple opportunities through the end of this year, 2012, where you can target almost anywhere on the near side and a large area of the South Pole. How are plans for more observations shaping up?
Oh, we are taking observations with as high a cadence as we can. So typically, we look to, I mentioned that Arecibo is a very, very heavily utilized resource, but we're lucky enough to get time on it. We hope to take between 1 and 2 bistatic opportunities every month going forward. And as you mentioned, given the tilt of the Earth orbit, etc., you get certain times of the month are better for the North Pole, certain for the South, but we have our database that helps us show when in each month is the best time to take these data. And of course, the moon is only visible to Arecibo certain parts of the month. So that's another parameter that we need to juggle.
All right. Well, Dr. Ben Bussey, thank you very much for being with us today to tell us more about the bistatic experiment with Mini-RF. We look forward to hearing more about your results.
Thank you for letting me talk to you today.
To find out more about this topic, visit our website at www.lunarscience.nasa.gov. Any opinions expressed are those of the individual and do not necessarily reflect the opinion of NASA or the NASA Lunar Science Institute. This podcast is produced for educational and information purposes only. On behalf of the NASA Lunar Science Institute, thanks for listening.
This episode of 365 Days of Astronomy is sponsored by iTelescope.net, expanding your horizons in astronomy today. The premier on-demand telescope network at dark sky sites in Spain, New Mexico, and Siding Spring, Australia.
You are listening to the IYA 365 Days of Astronomy podcast.
The 365 Days of Astronomy podcast is produced by Astrosphere New Media Association. Audio post-production by Preston Gibson. Bandwidth donated by Libsyn.com and Wizard Media. Web design by Clockwork Active Media Systems. You may reproduce and distribute this audio for non-commercial purposes. Please consider supporting the podcast with a few dollars or euros. Visit us on the web at 365daysofastronomy.org or email us at info@365daysofastronomy.org. Until tomorrow, goodbye.